Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey guys, welcome back to Soul Sisters. I am your host, Jessie Katz.
I am Dara Golub.
Who is also your host.
Also your host.
Two hosts for the price of one, which is free. Welcome to podcasting. And we are chilling in our little archive library in the Billboard office.
Yes.
It's a pretty fairly empty office today because a lot of our colleagues are still at Coachella, which just wrapped up yesterday.
So jealous.
Yeah, it looked like a good one. Mm-hmm. I have to say I've never been.
Me either.
And I used to think that I didn't care about going because even when I was in my 20s, I felt like I couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle like desert
living
and like heat and possibly no showering or like whatever the circumstance would be. But now I'm kind of sad that I don't go.
Which is funny because it's like now we're older.
Right.
Normally we'd want more comfort.
Yeah.
Well, there's ways to do it.
There are ways to do it. And if I went now, I think I would insist on those ways. Right. I would have a house and whatnot.
Or a nice teepee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least a nice teepee.
Right.
But yeah, there was some cool stuff that happened that I was jealous I wasn't there for. Like New Gaga.
Drum roll. Exciting.
New Gaga track that she premiered at the festival.
What are your feelings?
And I'm super into it.
Super down.
I feel like I've become a little bit of a pop princess in my taste.
Dare I say that's true since I've met you even.
Yes. Yes.
Within the past
year and a half.
A recent evolution. Working at Billboard. This is, you know, it's the world.
I love a good pop song. And her new song, The Cure, is
exactly that.
It's so good.
It's a great pop song.
Yeah. I saw the video of her that I think my colleague snapped singing the song at Coachella, and then I immediately found it on streaming and did not stop playing it for the rest of the weekend.
Gaga has no trouble streaming.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's great.
It's awesome.
Give it to us right away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So big fan of that. Kendrick was there playing, I think, almost all of his new album, which sounded awesome.
So good.
And I've been listening to that one a lot too.
We have a few favorite tracks from that record.
Love is my favorite.
Love, Lust, Humble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Loyalty with Riri.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Lorde was at Coachella and I think did a couple new ones. So if you guys were there, good for you.
Yeah.
And if you weren't, you can join us.
Yeah.
In our envy, Coachella envy. Anyway, so this is a big episode that we're bringing to you guys today.
Mm-hmm. For all you 90s
Another 90s lovers. Edition of Soul Sisters. The Cranberries have a new album coming out at the end of the month. And Dolores.
Old hits, a couple new hits.
Yeah. So Dolores O'Riordan from Cranberries came on Soul Sisters, which I asked them if she would come, and that was one of those asks that I was not confident about because I know everyone in the world wants to talk to her right now.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, she would love to make this work. Let's do it. And we were like, holy shit.
The archive library closet.
Yeah. And she's
awesome.
Yeah. She has one of those presences where I feel like she makes everything a little quiet around her, and you're just like, okay. You just give us what you want to give us, and we will happily receive it.
Right. She has been a rock star since she was 17.
Yeah. Like, right out of the gate.
Like, old school 90s rock star.
Yes.
And that you feel that presence.
Exactly. Yeah. She's a badass. She even sang a little bit for us on this one. So you're in for a treat, guys. There you go. Dolores from Cranberries.
You going?
Yeah.
All right. Dolores. Dolores, welcome to Soul Sisters.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in on this dreary day.
Yes, it is dreary.
How long are you in New York for?
I'm leaving tomorrow back to Ireland for rehearsals.
Okay. Where in Ireland do you go back?
Limerick in the south of Ireland, so I fly into Shannon. It's okay. It's always direct flights into Shannon, so it's quite handy.
Yeah, nice. That's good.
Is Limerick home now?
Yes.
Great. So I have a really good friend who's from Limerick, and I told her that you were coming in, and I was like, can you please give me some kind of cool, like, Limerick inside info that I can impress Dolores with? And she gave me a few options,
but she didn't
feel very sure of them, but I want to read them to you, okay? They're from Liz Ryan, my friend Liz. Okay, so tell me if any of these are at least things that you recognize. Yeah. Mickey Martin's pub pours a great pint of Guinness.
I don't know Mickey Martin.
Who doesn't pour a great pint of Guinness?
I'm sure some
exceptional.
Are better than others.
True, true.
Our county song is Limerick, You're a Lady.
That's right. I used to sing that when I was a kid. Oh, I better turn off my phone.
Do you still remember it? I thought that was the funniest name
of a
song.
Yeah, I do remember it, actually. I used to sing it. It was my party piece.
Really?
My mom used to have me sing it at family get-togethers. Limerick, you're my lady, your Shannon water, tears of joy that flow. Yes.
So you grew up singing that?
Yes.
Was that something that all the kids learn in school, or where do you
learn
that?
Yeah, we learned it in
family?
School. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, also, she said, I believe we were crime capital of Europe during the 80s and 90s.
You reckon?
And that's why Limerick has the nickname Stab City.
Yes. Oh. Yeah.
Which does
from
not
From Limerick, you're a lady.
My image of Limerick is this weird, idyllic little
yeah,
town.
Yeah, Limerick got tagged with that label for some reason when, you know, all cities have stabbings, you know.
Right.
But Limerick got tagged with the label. But it's shaking it. You know, now Limerick's a different city. And they got the award for the City of Culture in this European awards ceremony. And I actually played at, there was an event. And I played at the event in Limerick New Year's Eve 4 years ago, 2012. And it was actually through that event and through playing at that event that the decision, I'm having my tongue tied up here, to do an album with a quartet came from that event.
Oh, wow.
Because you played with strings?
That's right. We played with a quartet.
And you record, I mean, a lot of your music has strings, but you never played a full tour with strings. That's the difference, right?
That's the difference, yeah.
That's so exciting.
Cool. Okay, well, those are all of Liz's little Limerick trivia items. How soon after you joined the Cranberries were you, like, not able to have a normal undercover life in Limerick? How quickly did things change for you?
Pretty much straight away, because Linger went to top 10 in America. So once I left Limerick in 1990, I suppose it was 1990, I came back about a year later and we were absolutely massive, you know.
It's a smaller town, right?
It's a small town, yeah.
I'm curious what it was like. You grew up with six siblings? You were one of seven, is that right?
That's right.
Okay, where did you fall in that?
I was the youngest.
Wow. So what was that like? Was everyone given the musical option? Like, how did music come into your life?
I ended up being the most musical in the family. I started playing the tin whistle when I was five and Irish dancing and singing. And
were your siblings doing similar dancing?
Yeah, a couple of my younger brothers did Irish dancing, but they didn't like it. They went into sports more. My sister was a great Irish dancer, and she's very creative. She's always drawing and painting and writing poetry and stuff.
So then you just fell in love with all of the arts at that time?
That's right, yeah.
And you have mostly brothers, right?
Five brothers and one sister.
Okay. So even as a kid, you were used to being the girl in the group.
Right.
That's right, yeah.
That was a dynamic you were already comfortable with.
Lots of men around, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot more women around now, I notice, in rock and roll. Like, this place is full of women.
Right.
It's nice to see, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, does that feel good? Do you feel like there's a sisterhood?
I do. I like that. Yeah, we have a fair few women on the road as well. I like to have women around as much as possible.
Uh-huh.
I think it keeps the balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you do that when you're with the Cranberries? You have women in the crew?
We do. We have women in the crew.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that a newer thing, or have you always tried to have that balance?
I always tried to have the balance. You know, in the 90s, there weren't as many women, but now there's a lot more, you know.
So when before you joined the band, it was all boys. And then Niall left and they decided they wanted a woman singer to front the band. Is that right?
That was it. Well, they didn't necessarily want a female, but I arrived and they thought that I was really good.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that was like a specific thing they were looking
actually,
for.
Actually, the bass player used to be like, I don't want to have a girl singer. Yeah, he was 16.
We were starting talking about shopping around where we're recording.
Midtown
Manhattan. And I was just asking what you're looking for, and it's basically tour wardrobe, tour costume.
Yeah, I always just shop around and I try to find nice pieces that would look good on stage, and I put them into my wardrobe case, and then I have an assistant wardrobe girl and she hangs everything for me in my dressing room before the gig. My dressing room is important because that's your little sanctuary when you're on tour and you have to perform. You need a little room where you feel comfortable. And your own, you know, sometimes you walk into the room and all your clothes are there and your makeup and your bits, and you kind of calm down then.
Mm-hmm. Do you normally have your own space separate from the guys?
Yes, I have my own dressing room. Yeah, we'd need that.
Right.
Yeah.
But some of your looks have been so extravagant. I'm thinking specifically of the like lampshady sequin beaded headdress thing.
I love headdresses and I like chainmail and I like all that kind of stuff. I found this store when I first came down to New York, and it was called Gothic Renaissance. It's over near Union Square, and they had such cool stuff there. They had like these boots up to your knees that were all, maybe they'd weigh 20 pounds weight, all metal. Really cool stuff for the stage. Now, you wouldn't be wearing it going to mass with your mammy now, but you'd wear it on stage.
Right. And that brings me to the idea of you having these sort of dual personas. I mean, do you feel like you put on these clothes, you get into the stage, you know,
and
mentality?
It helps you channel a stage
person. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely I am. You know, I have certain things that I wear on stage and they're only for stage, but you wouldn't wear them walking around the streets because you'd look a bit crazy, you know. Although when I was manic, I dressed really weird for a while. I was manic for 4 months and I was wearing all kinds of metal things and masks and all kinds of weird stuff.
When was that?
That was 2 years ago.
Okay, so you were recording... Oh, no. That was sort of an in-between time.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, can we go back a little bit? We got thrown off course a little bit. But I want to... I just love this idea of you being this like young girl in Limerick who was just this exceptional talent in the town, had this voice that seemingly came out of nowhere, right?
Yes.
Just like it was born in you.
Yeah.
And you grew up with all these brothers, and then you join this band with a bunch of guys.
Yes.
And you come to them with this song that ends up being...
Linger.
Linger.
Yes.
Not just any song. And Linger ends up being the first hit. And you just are like... I feel like in every stage of your life, you just arrive completely formed.
Yes.
Like this presence, and you just like shake up the scene that you enter into.
Yes.
Is that what it felt like for you?
Yeah, it was it was turbulent. It was crazy. It was like a roller coaster, really. We went from being relatively unknown in Limerick, like a bunch of kids. I was in my school uniform when I walked into the room for the first time. And
you were 18?
17. And it was my last year in school.
Okay.
So I wanted to be in a rock band, and I had told my mother, and she said, I'll rock band your ear. And I said,
so they were not into the rock
not
and roll.
Not into, of course not, like, because it's not a proper job. And my mother wanted me to go to college, so I said to her, give me 1 year, Mom. Mm-hmm. Give me 1 year with the band, and if it takes off, good, and if it doesn't, I'll go back to college.
What was your plan if you hadn't found a band?
I was going to go to UCC and do European Studies.
Okay.
You know, sounded like an interesting course to take, you know, and being that the EU was forming and all at that point, I thought it'd be good to do European studies, you know.
Yeah.
So I went off with the Cranberries, and sure, within a year we were top 10 in America.
That's insane.
We just got really lucky, so I never went back then.
Right. I read this fascinating profile that Rolling Stone did with you in 95.
Yes.
So this was, I guess, 5 years-ish after the band forms.
Yes.
And you are so young, but you speak with such wisdom.
Yes.
And like you've gone through so much and you've already learned so much and you can already like look back on your work and reflect on your work.
Yes.
And the music industry. It was like so interesting to read you in that moment in time, especially because you guys just had your 25th anniversary a couple years ago, right?
Yes, that's right.
And you mentioned in that profile that you were talking about the chauvinism in the music industry.
Yeah.
And you said something about how you were glad that you were married young because you felt like it shielded you a bit from that.
Yes.
But I wonder in what ways you still were experiencing it then. Like, do you remember specific ways in which...
Chauvinism.
Yeah, like why... Yeah, like what you were thinking of at the time.
Well, I mean, you know, not everybody wanted a female to be the front face of a big band, you know.
Yeah.
It was definitely more male dominant at the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had to be much stronger than a man to actually make it. You had to be three times better than a man had to be, you know.
Right.
It's like a lot of male-dominated careers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be three times better than the man to get to the same place.
Right.
Yeah. And you were the songwriter.
Yes.
For almost everything.
Did you experience that people would often assume that the guys wrote the songs, right, or, you know, that, like, they just would assume that you did less than you actually did for the band?
Not really, because we did a lot of press, you know.
That's
so
true.
We clarified that pretty much immediately, you know.
Yeah.
Right, it was out of the gate, just like, I mean, that kind of instant fame at that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hear these stories, and today it's just, it's so different and also the same way. You can just sort of blow up out of nowhere, but how that happened.
Yeah.
In your first two records, you had like four of the greatest hits that you've had.
Yes.
And you wrote them as such a young person, and they are so like reflective and wise and mature.
Yes, and they haven't really dated that much.
Right.
Because our music, we kind of had our own style and we didn't fall into any categories and we weren't really copying anybody. We were just kind of making our own sound and trying to do our own thing. And I grew up with so many different types of music, old world music, you know. In the church, I was playing the organ and I used to do a lot of Gregorian Latin stuff, you know. Like I was singing the Panis Angelicus and the Ave Maria at a very young age. And those are very hard hymns to sing, you know. And then also I was involved in traditional Irish music. So I used to go to a lot of competitions with school bands. And then there was the, you know, the modern influences in rock and roll. My parents listened to Elvis and Frank Sinatra and the Beatles. And so I had a lot of exposure to different types of music growing up, you know.
Yeah, I mean, sure, when you think of the Cranberries, you remember you guys being so ubiquitous in the 90s, but I don't think of it as being a 90s sound, you know?
Like there's just rock and roll sound.
It's not a dated sound to my ear. I wouldn't, like, put you in a category with other bands that sounded like that.
Yes.
You know, and it's remained a very singular sound.
Yeah.
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 Which is why I'm curious your feeling of how you know when a song should be a Cranberry song versus now a Dolores O'Riordan song, or even a Dark song. You have other projects now.
Yes.
And how you conceptualize, like, okay, this feels different, or what is it that is a Cranberry sound for you?
Well, you know, sometimes I'll write a song, and what I do now is I have like a box, and I write songs and I put them into the box. I just keep them all on file, and then when it comes to releasing something, I can pull them out and I'll say to the Cranberries, try this one. It'll be demoed and it'll be recorded, but I want them to try and play it and see what they, you know, what kind of magic they're going to bring to it, you know. So two of the songs on this current album are out of that box. You know, they're two songs that I had written
maybe 3 years ago. That you were maybe going to do solo? Or?
I wasn't sure really, but I had them written anyway, because when the spontaneity comes to write a song, you write the song and then you keep it, because you don't know when you're going to get that spontaneity again, you know. I write very spontaneously, you know. It depends what I'm going through in my life. Sometimes I just feel compelled to write, and then I write and I capture it, and I'll just keep it, you know, because I know that eventually it'll be released in some shape or format.
Yeah, because your songs very much tell a story in a very simple, not too revealing way, but tell the story of your life.
Yes.
And so I imagine that, right, when something's good, when you're going through something, it's songwriting.
It's reflected in the work.
Yeah, it's reflected, like, and it's not so much a challenge to get to songwrite, because it's such a, feels like almost a therapeutic thing
yes,
for you. Yes,
it's very therapeutic. And there's two bonus tracks on this album. One of them is called Why. And that one.
That's a bonus track?
Yes, it's an extra track. It's a single. And I wrote that after my father died. And it was about a year and a half, actually, after he died, you know. Because when you first lose a parent, I think you're so overwhelmed with sadness and tears. Every morning when you wake up, it's a shock. And you get sick to your stomach every single morning because you realise they're gone. But it takes a long time to get used to waking up and to feel normal again, because there's somebody in your life like that forever, and then they're gone. So then it took me a while to get over the initial shock and to actually be able to write something good, you know. And this one was more.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Like, I felt like when he passed away that he didn't actually leave this world fully. I felt him around me a lot for a while. I could feel him trying to protect me and communicate with me. And there was a lot of weird little coincidences and stuff that made me think that maybe he was somewhere in between. Not necessarily crossed over properly, you know. And we all wonder about death, where people go and what happens, you know. But they certainly have to cross over from this dimension to another one, you know.
So, is that something you had thought about before he died?
Well, I mean,
like the spiritual afterlife, what happens?
I was raised Catholic, you know, and so you spent a lot of time reflecting on life and death. In religion, right. You do, you know, when you study the Bible or you go to church or whatever, there's an awful lot about life and death. And I was always kind of preoccupied with the notion of what happened to people when they died, you know. And as a teenager, I was kind of into it, and I was into The Cure and kind of into the dark side of things, you know, wondering about it. And kind of, you know, I used to go to graveyards and just hang out there. And so
and questioning what you had learned in the church, was that part of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know that I have to die and you have to die. We all have to die, you know. And when is the question? When is the question? When will we die? How long do we have here? And then you kind of wonder, what's it all about here? Because we're only here for a while and you can't find complete happiness here. That there's always sadness and there's always problems and trouble, and that you really can't find happiness. But then you wonder when it'll be your time, your calling, your time to die, you know. And what happens, you know? So that's something that my mind has always been preoccupied with. Mm-hmm. So when it happened to my father, I was very close to him. I was actually holding his hand when he took his last breath. Yeah. And I remember I was actually really happy about being there holding his hand, because I worried that he'd die and I'd be on tour, you know? Because when my grandfather died, I was on tour and I didn't go to the funeral. I never got to say goodbye. And this is one of the problems of being in a rock band, is that you're away and your loved ones die and you can't even see them. Yeah. So when my father died, I was around him a lot, you know, and I spent a lot of time with him in the hospital. And then I was with him when he took his last breath. But I felt something coming from him into my hand and into my body. I felt like a bit of his spirituality coming into me, and I felt like he was coming into me, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I felt like he was inside me for a little bit, for a while, that his spirit was in my spirit, you know, that we were caught up. And I felt that I had to let go. It took me a year and a half or 2 years.
Wow. And you wrote this song during that time?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, on the other side of that, you've been inspired a lot by the birth of your children and growing up. How quickly did you turn that sort of energy of being a new mother and being a mother into songwriting?
That came really quickly, because you're so ecstatic and high when you have a child, when you bring a new life into the world, you know. It's like a little person. And it's such a beautiful gift, and you're so positive. And again, it's that thing when you wake up in the morning and you kind of get a shock and you go, oh, I have a child. And you kind of run over and you are they wake you crying. But every time you look at them, it's the most uplifting feeling. You know, you're just so happy with the fact that you have this beautiful little child. And it's actually probably one of the happiest experiences in life women get to have, you know.
And you had that so soon after starting the band too, right?
Yes.
Your first child?
Yeah, my first child is 20 this year now.
Wow. Oh, man. Yeah. Did having children distract you from grappling with death? Or I've heard it can have the opposite effect, that having kids makes you really think about death. because then you feel like you're teed up to be next. Because they're the new ones on the planet.
You feel like you're the generation shifting off along. Yeah, I found that when I had my kids, I was really happy, you know, really positive. Uh-huh. But it was a little bit hard, though, because I always thought, oh, I have this little baby now and I have this career. How am I going to get back on tour? How am I going to balance it all, you know?
Yeah.
It was quite hard trying to juggle having children and going on tour and recording because the touring life is not, it's not compatible with children, you know? It's very difficult. You can't just bring them on tour, although I brought my two children on the road with me in the bus until my son was 5 and my daughter was 3.
Wow.
And they lived in the tour bus with me. But I would base them in a hub. Yeah. Uh-huh. Like I would base them in New York and then I would just travel to Boston or back and forth to them. And I did a lot more traveling. And it's, you know, it's quite a task to juggle children and rock and roll together.
On such a gigantic, like, level.
Yes.
I mean, you were, like, adjusting like to giant lifestyle changes in a matter of, you know, 7 years or something.
Yeah, you always feel like, pulled, you know? You feel pulled between trying to be in the band and trying to be on stage and trying to be the singer, but then trying to be the mother, you know? You feel kind of dragged. I've always felt pulled ever since I joined the Cranberries. I've felt pulled in different directions, you know? Yeah.
And that's part of why the hiatus...
The hiatus is good.
You said, I need to discover who I am as a person outside of the Cranberries.
Have some time away from touring.
And did that happen?
Yes.
Did you discover things about yourself?
Yeah, you know, you get to feel normal and get into routines and, you know, swimming and working out and dropping off the kids and picking them up and all that stuff, you know.
But, I mean, you also kind of became an adult in a moment when you couldn't do, like, that much alone time, sitting with yourself, just being with yourself. The way that people who aren't in the spotlight can do that in their 20s.
That's right, you know, and I think artists, we tend to be quite childish or childlike, because what happens is when you're on tour, you have people doing everything, normal things for you. Mm-hmm. Normal things like your clothes are laid out and you don't have to think about calling a car. The car's sitting there and you don't have to think about having money because generally everything's looked after that way. I remember being on tour when I first joined the Cranberries and being on the road for like 5 years. And then when I came off the road and we took our first break after working 5 consecutive years, I remember going into a restaurant for something to eat, but just getting up and walking out and then thinking, oh, you have to pay. Silly things like that. You forget to pay and you're not really responsible. Because suddenly you're on your own and you're responsible for yourself. After all these people, handlers, minding you, all you have to do is sign autographs and sing and smile.
Right.
Now suddenly all those people are gone. You're on your own and you have to function. So you had to do a lot of catching up, you know. You had to really mature quickly to get used to being a normal person, you know.
Yeah. How old is your youngest kid now?
11.
Okay. So it's a while before you're fully free of kids in
yes.
the house.
Yes.
But your oldest is now the age you were when you were really going through this at the beginning.
Yes.
And really, I mean...
He's even older, actually, now.
He's older than...
He's
okay,
20.
Because he's 20.
Because for your second record, you wrote the song 21 when you turned 21.
Right, which
to me, I don't know if this is true, but it feels like it's about songwriting and about just the challenge of being an artist and continuing to write.
Yes.
I don't know if that's...
I actually wrote that on my 21st birthday and I was in a bad relationship. It was my first love, lasted 3 years, and I lived in a flat, a dodgy flat with him. And, you know, it was good at first and then it just went bad. It was toxic and stuff, you know. So it took a long time to get out of that relationship. But I remember I was struggling a lot. And most of No Need to Argue was written during that period, you know. Your first love can be so traumatic, you know. It's heartbreaking stuff, you know.
First kiss, first love, those are potent subjects to make
great
proper songs for rock hits, yeah.
Linger was first kiss and then Dreams was first love. Yeah.
Did you ever feel, or has there been a journey of how it feels as far as it being a challenge when you start out with such giant hits? Has it been a challenge to now say, like, you know, want to match that?
It's hard to follow up that initial success that you have when you're at your prime, you know. And we were at our prime. We were, you know, young. We were all so young. And we had great songs. And when you're young as well and you're in relationships, everything's a lot more dramatic. Like, as you get older, it's not as dramatic. It's just more practically problems, you know. Mm-hmm. If you have a breakup in a relationship, you kind of deal with it practically, but you're not like, oh, I can't sleep. You know, but when you're young, you're all like, I can't live anymore. Yeah. I can't cope.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, you get older and life is different. You have children and, you know, you're not the same as when you're young. And I suppose that we were lucky. We were so young and we were so successful and we were able for the demand. There was a huge demand. A lot of people wanted to talk to us. There was a lot of performances to do and we were able to keep up with those demands. But as you get older, you become more weary. You know, your body gets older, you develop problems, you know, so you can't move.
Real problems.
The pace isn't as fast. Like, you have to keep the pace a little bit more mellowed, you know, and that's what we do now. You know, we're selective about what we will do. Mm-hmm. I'm very selective about what I will do and what I won't do because I know I have to protect my health and my mental health. Mm-hmm. That's mostly important. Mm-hmm. And if you bite off more than you can chew and then you can't cope, you've only got yourself to blame. So it's important to be selective and not to take on too much so that if things start to go bad and you start to feel mentally insecure, you know, you're stuck. You still have to get up on stage and perform even though you're not feeling good or, you know, you're going through a crisis. So I think it's just, it's about, you know, kind of controlling things and controlling your life if you can. Mm-hmm. It's the most important thing.
It's pretty incredible. You guys are doing something right. I mean, I feel like it's uncommon for a band to have this kind of career and not go through any lineup changes. I mean, you've all been original members, you know, from the beginning of the
clan. Except for you.
That's right.
Do you feel like there have been any significant missteps? Anything that, in retrospect, you'd say, oh, you know, as a career move, as the Cranberries, we could have done this differently, or have you really just had a pretty smooth ride?
I think that it went pretty well, you know. I think that, you know, we had so much immediate success that we probably weren't prepared for it, you know. We were very young.
Yeah, I've heard
we were
you say,
school-like.
Fame didn't, you don't feel like fame sat that well with you.
I think I was very young, you know, and naive. I hadn't grown up. I wasn't an adult, you know, I was in school. So all of my friends went to college and did normal things and got educated and got stronger, whereas we got thrown into the epitome of fame, you know. And then, you know, I think that it was so much so young that afterwards, you know, we were kind of frightened about it. Like, oh, I don't know if I want to go back on tour yet. Maybe we'll wait till next year. Maybe we'll wait till next year. You know, and we were inclined not to do too much, you know, kind of nervous in case it happened again.
Yeah. What was the decision behind putting old hits and new songs on the new album?
Yes. We decided to do it for the fans because it was the 25th anniversary.
Uh-huh.
And you know, we'd gotten together. There was a TV show, an American one called The Bachelorette,
uh-huh.
and they asked us to do
very
a cameo
familiar.
On it. Right? I've never
big
watched
fan
it.
Over
big
here.
Fan.
Are you?
Can't lie. Yep.
Do you watch it?
Oh yeah.
So there you go. And they asked us to do a cameo to do Linger at the grand finale where the couple are
it?
Together.
Yeah. I rewatched it, knowing this. I didn't remember that. But had you known about the show before?
I'd heard of it. Yeah, because it's a very big viewership. I think it's 8 million people watch
it.
Crazy. So I thought it was a great way as well to get maybe a younger generation to hear of the Cranberries and to hear Linger and see if they like it, you know. Just to, it's good PR, do you know, that's what I thought about it. So I said, we'll do it. And the quartet came along and we did it. And I said to Noel at that particular thing, I said, you know, maybe we should do an album for the fans with a quartet for the 25th anniversary. It would be nice because we hadn't seen each other for a few years at that point. Myself and Noel, it had been maybe 3 or 4 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Where does he live?
He lives in Limerick as well. But we don't hang out and we don't see each other unless we're working.
Mm-hmm. So the song selection was done how?
We chose a lot of the songs that the fans love live.
Yeah.
And we chose the singles.
Okay.
The hits.
Do you encounter people who only know you from the You've Got Mail soundtrack?
Yes.
I'm just thinking that because that song is such a huge part of that movie.
Which one?
And
that's right.
You've Got Mail is like the dreams. And You've Got Mail is the favorite rom-com of an entire generation.
Funny.
That's how they found you guys.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Some people will know you from something like it. I took the position of being a coach on The Voice of Ireland.
Right.
And I said I'd do it because I was offered it and I had a year off. I wasn't on tour. Uh-huh. I asked my kids, I said, do you think I should do it? And they were like, yeah, do it. Cool. And I said, okay, why not? Could be interesting. Uh-huh. So I did it. And what happened was I got loads of little fans, you know, 5 and 6 year olds. And in Ireland, I'd be walking along, going for my walk in the afternoon, and a car would stop, a mommy with a car full of kids, and they'd be going, hi, Dolores.
From the show.
And they never heard of the Cranberries.
Oh,
they
were wow.
Like, they wouldn't have a clue about the Cranberries.
Do you dig that? Like, is that cool?
We saw you on telly. Yeah, it was cool. Why not? It was a different hat, you know, it was like being someone else.
Yeah.
That's fun.
So I had a load of little small fans, you know, 5 to 10 year olds.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious your feeling about streaming revolution that's happening, and you know, because new generation of fans are able to access your music so easily now.
Yeah,
I wonder how you feel about the balance of that accessibility versus, you know, it's not a great thing for artists, no money, right? Like, how do you feel about Spotify? I know Roses is not on Spotify. I don't know if you are aware of that.
I feel like we were really lucky actually to have had all the success when we did, because, you know, you could make money back then, and, you know, people went out and bought your CDs.
Right.
So you could monitor how many people were listening to your music, and now you can't. But having said that, it's just the way it is, and it's pointless being too bitter about it, you know, because it's not going to help. You just have to kind of accept that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
You must make the best of it. And, you know, I mean, one of the bonuses is that you can go on there and see all your fans talking to each other, mm-hmm. and you have direct communication with your audience. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, like, fan clubs around the world.
Oh, I have to shout out the Cranberries World Fan Club. Do you know about this fan site?
Heard of it.
I want to shout out Camille and Luke.
Yes.
Because they're outstanding. It is the greatest fan site I've ever come across.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, it's an epic.
Who run it?
These are people who run it.
Okay.
Yeah. I said the two people. Oh my God. Well, it doesn't, that's the thing. Once you find Cranberries World, you don't need to deep dive. It's all there.
Yeah.
You have such devoted, loyal fans.
Yes, it's lovely. And you get to see that. So without the internet, we'd never see that. So it's good because sometimes you need a little bit of a boost of confidence, and then you go, oh yeah, we should probably record more material then.
Right.
You know?
There you go.
And the 5 and 10 year olds are going to be able to listen to your whole catalog.
Yeah. I mean, teeny boppers too.
Yeah. So when does the tour start?
The tour starts on the 1st of May.
Okay.
And we are going out for about 6 weeks in Europe. And then we're hoping to come across to America in September. That's been locked in at the moment.
Okay.
So we have 18 dates booked across the States. There's 2 in New York.
Yes. So.
How are you feeling about all this?
I'm feeling quite excited, you know. I'm just really looking forward to the point of getting up on stage and getting into it, you know, getting into performing.
Yeah.
But I just did a few shows in Mexico there about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I did one in Peru maybe 2 months ago. And so I've been doing, last summer I did a load of festivals in Europe.
With the Cranberries or?
Yes, with the Cranberries, European festivals. So I try not to let it too long without getting up on stage so that, you know, I'm still, you know,
it will able
to perform and that side of your brain, you know, being up on stage performing.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask for any like young female rock and rollers who are listening to this? What would you, I mean, I hate asking questions like this, but is there any kind of wisdom that you could impart to them about how to just maintain yourself through all the phases and evolutions of music that you've gone through in life, that like you still seem very much like in control of who you are and what you want and what your artistic voice is?
I think it's very important to be in control. And to, if you don't want to do something, simply say no. And you might be surrounded by people pushing you because mm-hmm. there's only one artist and there's a lot of people surrounding the artist. But it's very important that you remain firm on the ground that, no, I don't want to do that, or I don't want to wear that, or, you know, don't put yourself into a situation you don't want to be in because, you know, you might fall out of control then. It's important to try and stay in control of your own life, your own career and your own destiny.
Amen.
You know? Yes.
Great advice.
Great advice.
All right. Something Else is out on April 28th. Gorgeous renditions
Beautiful.
Of old stuff. Gorgeous new stuff.
With the Irish Chamber Orchestra.
That's right.
So beautiful.
Yeah, check it out, guys. And we'll all come see you at your shows.
Okay, very good.
Thanks, Laura.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks, girls.
If you could return, don't let it burn.